Morning, ladies and gentlemen. Our first case for argument is Fairmont Homes v. Blue Lynx. Mr. Ledoux.
Good morning. I represent Huber Engineer Woods and its distributors, Blue Lynx and Universal Forest Products. Huber manufactures oriented strand board panels and other wood products for use in the construction industry. Fairmont Homes purchased Huber's panels and used them for subflooring in Fairmont's modular homes. Huber's panels were only one component in the engineered floor systems that were included in Fairmont's modular homes. Other components included the rim board that framed the floor, the joists or trusses that held up the floor panels, the adhesive nail and screws that fastened the floor panels to the floor joists. Between 2005 and 2007, Fairmont built 1,026 modular homes using Huber's panels as part of the engineered floor system. Fairmont claimed that 236, about 20% of these 1,026 homes, developed floor problems which that were described as uneven or wavy floors after the homes were built at Fairmont's plant and then transported by truck to a home site where they were set on a foundation either using a crane or after rolling them off a truck. Fairmont did not receive complaints about the floors in the other 790 homes that included Huber's floor panels as part of the floor systems. Fairmont assumed that the uneven or wavy floors in the 236 homes were caused by a manufacturing defect in Fairmont's panels. Specifically, Fairmont assumed that Huber's floor panels absorbed moisture and expanded excessively, causing the floors to become uneven or wavy. This is a condition known as excessive linear expansion. At Huber's factory, these panels were cut to 95.
Excuse me, Mr. Ledoux, you're saying that was an assumption by Fairmont, but that actually was the finding of fact by the judge, right?
It was the finding of fact, Your Honor, but Fairmont's witnesses at trial admitted that they assumed this problem. And in repairing the floors, Fairmont's repair crews were not asked to determine the cause of the wavy floors, nor were they asked to measure the floor panels.
But the expert, the wood man, he was the one who gave the opinion that this flooring absorbed moisture and as a result expanded and caused the waves. He seems like a reputable expert. He got all these degrees and his report is very thorough. And I don't know why isn't that the end of the case?
Your Honor, his opinions still need to pass, regardless of his reputation, his opinions still need to pass the...
His reputation, I'm talking about the opinion. It's thorough. He's competent in terms of his educational background and professional experience, and he wrote this report, and I don't know, what's wrong with the report?
Well, Your Honor, his opinions didn't meet the reliability or...
What's unreliable about them?
Well, first of all, Your Honor, he tested four samples of Huber's panels, and the test that he used was a variant on the PS2 test that Huber and others in the industry used to test for maximum potential linear expansion. It's a quality control test. And the results of his tests prove that the four samples he tested had a maximum potential linear expansion of 0.391%, which is within the industry standards for maximum linear expansion. So basically,
industry standards relevant. It's breach of warranty. I mean, industry might be very protective of its members and set standards which provided no protection at all to consumers, right?
Sure, Your Honor. Well, I think the answer to that question...
It's a standard. Is there anything else wrong with the expert's report?
Yes, Your Honor.
Testimony?
Because the major problem with Dr. Vaya's report is his perfect storm theory. He had this perfect storm theory, and he needed this perfect storm theory in order to explain why only 236 of the homes, only 20% of them, and not all of them, suffered.
You might figure you got lucky.
Well, it's the perfect storm theory is problematic and unreliable because it was based on two assumptions. One was that 20 to 30% of the panels that came out of Huber's presses.
Now, this failure rate, you would agree, was high.
20 to 30%. The failure rate in the
company would be awful if 20% of its floors buckle. So what's your explanation for why it has such a high failure rate?
Well, Your Honor, we believe that the explanation is in the other reasonable causes of wavy floors that were proved during Fairmont's case in chief.
Like what?
Well, like the joists that were uneven in the home. And by uneven, I mean one higher than the other. And the point.
So 20% of your homes have uneven joists?
We couldn't tell whether.
Wait a second. You produce, you know, X thousand a year. Do 20% have defective joists?
I guess the question is not whether 20% of them do.
What's your experience, right? Is this abnormal experience, or does 20% of your floors are no good? Which event? I'm not going to buy a house from your company.
Well, we only know about
20% failure rate is extraordinary. So what is your average failure rate for these for floors?
I don't know what Fairmont's average failure rate is, Your Honor.
Not 20%, or you'd be out of business, right?
That's probably a fair assumption,
right,
Your Honor.
So why did this batch have a 20% failure rate?
The evidence showed that it was because of the other problems.
No, but that doesn't make sense. What is it that made this batch fail 20% of the time? It must have been something special about this batch, right? Is it where these houses are sold, or what?
The evidence demonstrated
all the joints put together the same way, joists that you're talking about?
They were not, Your Honor. The joists were, there were different types of joists, and they were assembled differently.
In 20% of this batch, they put the joists together in the wrong way. Who are they?
They were Fairmont's employees.
So it's the plaintiff's problem. They put it together wrong.
Yes, Your Honor. And it's.
Well, what's your evidence of that?
It's the plaintiff's burden to prove that.
What is your evidence for that?
The actual reasonable causes of wavy floors that were included in the repair records that were produced during Fairmont's case in chief.
So you think you've actually proved that their employees were responsible for these failures?
I don't think that's the defendant's burden to prove it at trial, Your Honor. It was Fairmont's burden to negate.
It was their burden to prove it wasn't, is what you're saying.
Yes, Your Honor. And I believe that this court's...
A list of negatives? It wasn't caused by this? It wasn't caused by that?
No, Your Honor, I wouldn't say that they had to prove a list of negatives, but I think this court's holding in the Witted versus General Motors case and the Schleyer case that we cited from the Eastern District of Pennsylvania show that...
The Eastern District of... Oh, come on. District court cases are not precedents. So.
Okay, Your Honor, well, then I'll refer this court to its own holding in Royal Business Machines as well. And those cases stand for the proposition that when the plaintiff's evidence demonstrates other reasonable causes, it's the plaintiff's burden to negate those other reasonable causes. And the plaintiff's evidence did not do that in this
case.
Here's,
obviously, the district court saw this very differently from the way you're describing it. Let me ask you about, as I understand their theory, they put you in the position of saying that what accounts for this was a dramatic increase in manufacturing errors by Fairmont staff that happened to coincide with when they started buying your clients' panels and ended as soon as they stopped. Is that right?
I don't think so, Your Honor, because there was evidence of the same kind of construction defects in Fairmont's use with the Hambro panels, the ones that were used before ours.
The district court looked at that and rejected it. So... As the case comes to us, we've got a finding that these problems occurred in all these different states, all these different climates, with and without all these various other minor problems in the floors. The problems were fixed by the kerf cuts that are the diagnosed treatment for excessive expansion. So why isn't it reasonable to assume under those circumstances, well, the most likely cause, maybe not QED, it's not mathematical proof, but it's a reasonable conclusion,
Your Honor,
that your client's products were the problem.
Let me address both of those points. The idea that Huber's panels were one common factor in these 236 homes and they were spread all over the United States, I think that argument actually cuts against Fairmont's case, because Huber's panels were also a common factor in the 790 homes that had no floor problems at all. So the circumstantial evidence there actually weighs in favor of an inference that it was not Huber's panels. And with the kerf cuts,
because you don't expect 100% failure, because as you say, there are other factors involved. The 20% failure is too high, right? I mean, it would ruin Fairmont.
It was still Fairmont's burden to show that that failure was based on a defect with Huber's floor panel.
Well, they have evidence of that, obviously. They have their expert. And the question is whether your evidence creates such doubt as to the causal significance of Huber's manufacturing that the verdict can't stand.
Well, as you know, Your Honor, we've argued that the expert's testimony and opinions should not have been admitted, and without those...
I see that. I mean,
you're into your rebuttal time.
Thank you.
If I could just ask, I want to put one question on your radar screen, though, before you sit down, Mr. Ledoux. And
yes,
that is, you've criticized the district court for having failed to provide an adequate explanation of deciding to accept Dr. Vaya's testimony. If we were to agree with you on that, would the remedy be simply a remand to Judge Nuchterlein to give us an explanation that we could then consider?
Would you like an answer now, Your Honor?
Take your pick.
Mm-hmm. I think the answer is no, because under Indiana law, without Dr. Vaya's testimony or other admissible expert testimony, Fairmont could not prove its case.
That's a separate issue. And the district judge said he didn't even need Vaya's conclusions. But if the problem is the inadequate explanation for the decision to admit, why isn't the proper remedy simply to ask Judge Nuchterlein to give us an explanation?
Well, that's not the problem, Your Honor. We pointed the inadequate explanation out only to support our position that this court should review his decision to admit Dr. Vaya's testimony under a de novo review standard.
How can we do that?
Medavante, Your Honor.
We did that to affirm, not to reverse.
In that case, the decision was to affirm. It certainly could be reviewed de novo here, and the courts can decide either way.
Doesn't that sort of turn the role of the appellate court and district court upside down?
I don't think so, Your Honor, because we're challenging the judge's decision and arguing that it was wrong, not because he didn't give an adequate explanation, but because Dr. Vaya's opinions did not meet the relevance and reliability standards under Rule 702.
Okay, thank you, Mr.
I'll reserve
Mr.
The rest
Rice.
Good morning. May it please the Court, Charlie Rice on behalf of Fairmont Homes. In order to give the proper perspective to where we are in this case, I think you have to, in order to view the defendant's objection to Dr. Vaya's testimony, look at their worldview on causation, because I think it affects how the arguments regarding Dr. Vaya are...
There could be more than one explanation for why these things worked, could there?
There is, under Indiana law, the rule of
my question is,
a proximate cause.
There are other possibilities.
And the key is possibilities.
Yes.
Well,
it's all just a possibility.
Absolutely. It could be a possibility that an earthquake caused
it. Yeah, but the suggestion that without being... The humor is always provided by the bench, not by the... my suggestion is that there is, on the record, sufficient evidence to show that there are other possibilities for the reason that the thing worked.
I don't think so, for this reason. The questions which were couched to the witnesses were, could this have caused it? Is it possible this could have caused it? Is that possible? It's not under the way the instruction
was
is.
Put, when the question was put for the ultimate one that the judge used as his suggestion, a selection of which of these things happened, the same thing happened. It is possible that this was caused by something they did wrong.
And the key is that, as was argued by us in the district court and also pointed out here, otherwise a plaintiff would have to prove a host of negatives, and yes. All a defendant would have to do is throw out possibilities.
It's your burden, however, to prove that those possibilities don't affect the outcome in this case.
I think it's the plaintiff's burden to prove what is reasonable and probable as to causation.
Sure.
And I think we did that because I think
and
we
that
could...
That would eliminate other things.
Eliminating other things as what is the substantial factor or what cause predominates over the other things. It's entirely, under Indiana contract law, it's entirely consistent to say that there may have been some other influence caused by a Joyce that might have been out of plumb.
Well,
or
whatever there was, those were presented to the district court, I assume. And
absolutely.
So the district court made a decision as to which of the factual findings he was going to accept, and he did.
Correct. Causation is an issue of fact, and that's what the fact finder decided. And ultimately, what the defendants are doing by challenging the application of the rule of causation, they're asking this court to engage in reweighing the evidence and looking at all the evidence which was submitted in the supplemental appendix and substitute its judgment for the trial court or the finder
of
fact.
For futures, the one on anything is possible. It is possible we were all created 5 minutes ago with our memories intact, but it's highly unlikely.
I would agree.
So go on with your intact memory.
Thank you. One of the problems that flows from this causation argument that the defendants have is how they view Dr. Vi. Because the argument they have regarding Dr. Vi is because Dr. Vi didn't do what they want to do regarding causation, which is to prove a negative, that it's unreliable. This court has previously said that for an expert's testimony in the St. Paul Mercury case in 2008, in order to be admissible on the issue of causation, an expert testimony need not eliminate all other possible causes. The fact that several possible causes might remain uneliminated only goes to the accuracy of the conclusion, not to the soundness or the methodology, which is exactly consistent with the rule of law regarding causation. Now, regarding the district court's analysis of Dr. Vi's testimony and whether...
You'd have to discuss alternatives, wouldn't they?
The plaintiff would have to discuss alternatives?
Yeah.
The plaintiff did. And the plaintiff, in this case, presented evidence to the trier of fact that when the floors left Fairmont, they were flat. Fairmont had a quality control system in place. Fairmont had been manufacturing homes for 40 years and hadn't had an instance like this but for the Hambro incident, which caused them to select Advantech in the first place. I think by doing that and also instituting the idea of randomness, that this wasn't one transporter who was somehow transporting these homes in a negligent manner, but we've got many different transporters, homes in many different states, it adds an idea that by this randomness, there's one consistent element in all of these problems, and that's the Advantech.
Mr. Rice, one of the points that seemed reasonably persuasive to me was the idea that in most of these homes that had problems, the kerf cut remedy fixed the problem, which seems to suggest, okay, the problem was excessive expansion. It's unclear to me whether 52 or 53 homes that the magistrate judge Nuchterlein wrote about in which the kerf cuts had been made early while while they were still being manufactured and they still developed the problem. So I was unclear as to how those 52 or 53 homes could have been where the problems could have been the result of excessive expansion.
Correct. And the magistrate was pointing to, once the problem developed, Fairmont instituted policies to put these kerf cuts in the factory. They still developed problems outside. In those instances, the gaps would then close up, and there's a point at which there are too many kerf cuts you can put into a floor. Mm-hmm. You'd either have to replace the floor, or depending on where the location is in relation to walls, remove a section or put other curb cuts in.
Where do we find the specific evidence on those homes?
That would be in Exhibit 1, which is the summary exhibit.
But could you repeat that? If the curb cuts are made in the factory, why is it that there's still a problem? Because are you saying they couldn't make the curb cuts large enough to compensate for the expansion?
There were three curb cuts which were put in, or I'm sorry, there was a curb cut of 1/8 which was first put into in the factory. Then they put in a curb cut bringing it to 3/16. And that's how it was shipped out from Fairmont. But then the home still developed problems. So
you're saying they couldn't have done more than 3/16 because eventually you don't have a floor.
space. Most of these floors would have linoleum, and if you have too many curb cuts which are put in prior to the expansion occurring, then you're going to have little dips, and no one's going to want to buy the home. So there was a trade-off in terms of trying to put the gapping in that would account for the planned expansion, or what at that point we realized was happening with the expansion, versus having a quality product that people would buy.
So with those, what did you do to repair them?
With those homes, there were instances where we'd put, because there were pre-curb cuts in there, would put strong backs in, and the strong back is put in underneath. Mm-hmm. And there were also instances where we'd have to take the floors out.
So you went ahead and did repairs.
We did repairs
after shipment on those homes.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. One of the things I wanted to point out regarding Dr. Bai's testimony and how the district court analyzed it is that in order to do a Daubert analysis, there's no mechanical rule that the Court of Appeals has dictated to the trial courts that you have to do it this way or that way. What the district court did regarding Dr. Bai was to conduct his analysis by asking him questions. And if you look at Dr. Bai's testimony, there's been no dispute regarding Dr. Bai's qualifications here. But the district court asked him a number of questions regarding the sample size, regarding the methodology.
And how he came to the conclusion he got.
Correct.
His qualifications should pass by him as a given and get to, how did you get there? What did you do?
Exactly, and the district court asked some questions on that. And I think it's an onerous burden to put on a district court to have to have, unless there's going to be a prescription, you have to do this and check these boxes before you can admit expert testimony. What's important here is that the district court did its job by satisfying itself through just what you're doing here today, asking questions and getting answers.
Right, but we have to write an opinion that explains what we conclude. And this was pretty terse, just a finding he's credible, right?
Within the opinion, within mm-hmm. within the trial transcript, and within the actual, discussion with Mr. Ledoux, when Mr. Ledoux made his motion, but also looking at the court's comments within those questions, it's clear that the court went through the analysis that you'd want any district court to do. And those sites can be found at, in the transcript at 513, 514, 477, and 444 and 445.
Thank you.
What I find a little puzzling, maybe I've just missed this, but in his report, he certainly provides evidence that these panels expand excessively, but I didn't see anything about sort of the chemistry of the wood, what it was about the Huber panels that make them so hygroscopic.
I think what he was talking about has to do with the way that the core surface to core ratio and the way that you build a piece of OSB.
What's OSB?
Oriented strand board. And the way they make it is you have these oriented strand board.
What the hell is that mean?
I didn't hear the second word after oriented.
Strand. S-T-R-A-N-D, yes. And the way that you make it...
Okay, oriented strand.
...is you have these little flakes, which are about an inch wide, 3 inches long, and you chop them up, and you lay them out in a pattern where you'll have a row of flakes or a layer of flakes all pointing in one direction, and then a layer going in the perpendicular direction. And how you compose the board with your layers and the glue you use affects certain properties, such as strength, which they made this to be a very strong board. But when you do that, in order to get strength, you're going to create a board which will expand in the width direction. And the reason for that is when a tree absorbs water, that the tree doesn't expand vertically. It expands side to side.
I thought it grew up and sideways.
Well, hopefully it grows up, but the way it will expand when it's got water is predominantly in the perpendicular direction. And it's that principle which lent itself.
They made this too tight?
They made it strong.
So it's not the wood they used. Is that right, you're saying? It's the way they assemble the stuff. It's not they use some wood that particularly loves water.
Right. Correct. What they did is they used a resin which loved water.
I see. Right.
Did
he discuss that? I didn't notice that.
Yes. Yes. Okay. When he talks about the MDI. MDI is the resin.
I see. Okay.
And when I see that I'm running out of time here, but I don't know if there are any other questions regarding the scientific basis.
There are, so I don't know.
Well, what I want to close on is that ultimately this is a case dealing with the trier of facts, findings of fact. And the question isn't whether there was evidence that the court could have ruled, there's that word again, could have ruled in favor of Huber here, but that the court, listening to all the evidence, looking at the witnesses, considering everything, made a determination in favor of Fairmont. And the question this court has to answer is, was that clearly erroneous in light of the evidence presented? It was not.
So PMDI is the resin, is that right?
MDI.
MDI. Okay.
Yes.
Okay, well,
thank you, Judge.
Thank you very much, Mr. Wright. So, Mr. Ledoux, was there anything further?
Mr. Honor, let me just pick up where your discussion with Mr. Rice left off. Huber's resin and chemical formulas don't explain why only 20% of these panels were allegedly defective or 20% of the floors had problems, because that resin and formula...
I don't understand. If you create a flaw in a product, usually that will just... Or often that will just make the product unusable in some percentage of cases, right? It will make it totally unusable. It's a flaw, right?
If it's the resin that's bad or the formula that's bad, how did all of those panels end up only in those 23?
The resin may be bad, but it may be that the badness is it's probabilistic, right? A lot of forms are probabilistic. You have a defect in an airplane, well, maybe you have more crashes. That doesn't mean every plane crashes that has this defective part.
Well, there was no evidence that the resin or any chemical formula caused the panels to expand excessively, or even that they ever expanded excessively. And, Your Honor, let me finish with this point.
Of course.
It is, you can have a wavy or defective floor system without having a defective or malfunctioning floor panel. That's why Fairmont needed an expert.
But you would have to be able to show that Fairmont had some, you know, systemic problem in its factory, so that it was introducing this defect that caused 20% of the floors to fail, right?
Again, Your Honor, we showed specific examples of defects which Fairmont's witnesses admitted could cause the wavy floors, and Fairmont's own evidence proved that they actually existed.
The factory.
Whether they occurred in the factory or during transportation or setting, there were crooked joists.
During transportation, that's a very bad example, right? Because there's no indication that their transportation systems changed so that all of a sudden 20% of their floors were damaged in transportation. That's very implausible.
Somehow the joists became uneven, crooked, broken when the homes were repaired.
That doesn't make sense. You'd have to have an explanation. Why would the joists... Did Fairmont all of a sudden hire a bunch of incompetent installers? Is that your theory?
No, Your Honor, but our records, the repair records, which were the only evidence of the condition of the floors, show joists that are an inch and a half higher than the ones around them. And when you have a joist that's an inch and a half higher than the ones around them, even with a perfectly fine floor panel, you're going to get a hump in the floor. And that's it was Fairmont's burden to show that it wasn't that problem that caused the hump in the floor.
Did you all look into Fairmont's record of customer complaints about wavy floors before and after their use of your products?
The only evidence we had on that was with respect to the Hambro product, Your Honor.
Yeah, but
and they did have some of the same complaints with the Hambro product, and in Fairmont's investigation of the Hambro product, it showed the same kind of issues with... uneven joists or crooked
but
or broken joists.
Well, sure, there are always going to be some manufacturing problems, but there was no indication that there had always been a 20-25% failure rate.
We don't have any idea what the percentages were.
Isn't that kind of important here?
I think if I take that back. I think if you look at the Hambro evidence that was introduced in the record, they had almost the identical. I think it was about 30%.
And the district court explained that away, rejected it. So, but apart from that?
There was no other evidence presented on the percentage of failures.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Ledoux and Mr. Rice.